Buenos dias a toda mi gente. Welcome to another episode of Shaggin' Flies. As always, we're bringing you a wonderful, eclectic, zigzagging conversation this week with Patrick Ellington, who is currently writing for Uncultured and whose work has appeared at Baseball Prospectus and Overtime Heroics. He also hosts the Pinch Talk podcast and does coverage of the High A Lake County Captains in the Cleveland organization. Just like we anticipated, Patrick is an incredibly cool dude, and we had a great conversation going in between Cleveland and Allison Chains and Michael Mann and Joakim Noah and Sade and CC Sabathia and minor league baseball and, of course, one of my personal favorite pastimes, hating on Curt Schilling. So, without any more jawing off, here we go with episode 15 of Shaggin' Flies, featuring the one and only Patrick Ellington.
First of all, thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
You just, like, must pay attention enough to me. Pay attention enough to me to know.
Yeah,
to have me on the show, and that means a lot. I'm really flattered to be here. You know, I'm just kind of shocked right now.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You've come up pretty fast lately. So, before we were going to ask you about that first of all, but before we get to any of that, I don't actually know like where you are right now. My impression is that you're an Ohio guy in that area. As a Cleveland.
I'm currently in Cleveland on the east side of Cleveland. I was born in Cleveland in 1998. I'm 22 years old. I'll turn 23 next week.
Happy early birthday.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And then it wasn't just Cleveland. Youngstown, Ohio was formulated in my life because that's where most of my family is. My mother's family moved to Youngstown in the 1950s, and my father's side moved in the 1970s. So my family has long standing ties to Youngstown, and my father is still there right now while my mom is in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. So I'm in Cleveland right now. I'm actually in the west side of a friend's house recording this. So.
Oh, cool.
Nice. I've never spent much. I always felt like Cleveland gets kind of like a bad rap from the rest of the country. It's always like the butt of jokes and stuff like that. And like I've driven through Cleveland and Youngstown many times on I-80 the south side and Youngstown, and then taking 90 up through New York. And I would always drive up. I'm sure you've done it. You're on the interstate up there driving past. Is it still Progressive Field? No, I can never keep track of the name.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and you're driving up through like kind of downtown Cleveland, and I always remember just looking around and being like, "Yo, like, why are people always talking smack about like it's like it seems like an okay place." Like, I don't know.
I've never been, but it sounds cool.
Well, Cleveland has its pros and cons like the other city. It's just about the jokes, and kind of rightfully so for some of the things, in my opinion, it's kind of based on how things are. But that's a whole other story for another day, honestly. Yeah. Where are you guys from?
Oh, well, I am a resident Marylander, born and raised. I live just outside of Annapolis, Maryland. So, been there all my life, as has my family since like the 1800s. So, and probably further back, I just can't find the records. But yeah, we've been here forever.
Yeah, and I'm on the south side of Chicago in my parents' house. Just as their parents were on the south side of Chicago. Been here for a long time too. So
we never leave our hometowns.
Never.
We're stuck forever.
Just kidding.
I've always kind of wondered actually, I'm thinking about it. Why does Cleveland get so much crap? Like, where does that originate? Where does the whole like Cleveland sucks thing, like, where does that come from? It seems really random to me to like, for some reason, the entire country has just been like, yeah, that city in the Midwest, it sucks for like no reason. It's like we were just like, yeah, Springfield, Illinois, the worst for some reason, you know. Just, it's really weird to me. I feel like there's got to be some origin to it, and I have no idea what it is. Like, this is an open question. Do you guys know? Because I have no clue.
I have no clue either. I'm not sure, but I mean,
it's so bizarre.
Most of the days are funny.
There is a magazine article called "The Man Who Made Cleveland a National Joke." Okay, I'll stick this next. Oh. But okay. Anyhow, so no, you. Curious.
All right, yeah, I'll do some off mic reading on that because.
Yeah, seriously, hey, we love talking about cities on here.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your writing for a brief moment then. So you started writing for Unculture recently. You've got your stuff at Baseball Pro. I've read and really enjoyed your Black Baseball Players You Need to Know, MLB Minor League Players. So I'm just curious, how did you get into writing? How did you start? Is that, you know, something you were always doing, or what inspired all this?
So I want to be a writer since I was about 12 years old. But for me, starting out as a novelist and an author, fiction. That's when I knew I wanted to be at 12. And then as I got older, it included screenwriting and then film directing. Mm. And then I started writing baseball articles. My first article I published was in 2019 when Cece Sabathia announced that he was going to retire. Mm-hmm. And that was because Cece Sabathia was my first favorite player growing up in Cleveland. Black pitcher, won a Cy Young Award. I was 9 years old when you won the Cy Young Award in 2007. That was a big deal for me.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Growing up in Cleveland, for me, I had CeCe Sabathia and LeBron James. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the best anybody can ever say in the history of the city, honestly. That was just such a joy for me. I'm just so happy to have it.
Did you watch the CeCe documentary that he did?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
No, it's really good. Ben, have you seen that?
I am unaware of it. I didn't know it was a thing.
It's, what it's is it? Super. Yeah, you know, it's like a self-produced documentary he did for, I think, like HBO Max or one of those joints. And it's like just his life story, talking about how, like, you know, growing up in California and like just his life and shit like that. And it's super interesting. He also talks really, really upfront about like dealing with the alcohol issues. Wow. And some of the stuff that he dealt with later in his career. And it's really, he does an incredible job. He seems like such a, I love his podcast too, R2C2. Even though I'll have to delete that plug. We don't do plugs. Just kidding.
No.
He seems like a really,
I think we can plug CeCe Sabathia. We'll make an exception for CeCe Sabathia.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people I know who cover the minors and cover the Indies organization and stuff like that say he's a really nice guy. So a lot of the writers I know. So. Around a long time, almost longer than I've been alive. So their glory kind of counts as well. So they say good things about CeCe.
That's awesome. So I'm curious. So Zach mentioned the article series you've been doing, the Black Players That You Need to Know. And I'm curious, what kind of inspired you to start doing that article series?
So the CeCe kind of accepts the groundwork of that just because I kind of mentioned having someone that looked like me, a starting pitcher at that, a Cy Young winning starting pitcher, Black American pitcher, that was a milestone. So I kind of set the precedent. But Black Players Need to Know About articles started just because I want to do something during Black History Month right quick, just to celebrate some guys. And it kind of grew into a series where I can just give you guys some visibility and celebrate them, and maybe give some people that don't really care about baseball that I know some info on some Black players and may give them some attention to the game from not just Black Americans, but Black players from all over the diaspora because they exist in baseball.
Word. Yeah, that's dope. You've been doing interviews and stuff now too. You've kind of stepped all the way up to actually talking to players and stuff. I really enjoyed your,
He's gone. We lost him. Poof. We'll fill the void.
All right, back. My bad, you guys. My fault.
No, you're good.
You good? I watched your video, your interview with DJ Gladney, which is super great, and some of the one you did with Randy Wilkins, which is also really cool. But do you have any favorite people that you've talked to or interviewed or just gotten to interact with through your time doing some of this now?
So just to give you the insight on how it happened, and kind of and trace my steps with that, what happened after that. And actually, you know what? I was just going to give you my whole kind of career so far.
Absolutely. Please do.
Roll it out. Please do.
I want to hear it.
Okay, cool. So, it was actually December 31st, January 1st. Shakia Taylor reached out to me and said, "Hey, hi, Pat. My name is Shakia Taylor. I looked at your Black Baseball Player articles. I passed them on to Jen Ramos at Baseball Respectus. They said they're going to pass the articles on to somebody else." And just to set those two on record, because they basically got me to here. They kind of put me on a fast track, I guess. That's really dope, just because just with that one thing they did, and it kind of got me started. And just to do it off something that started, it was a hobby for me also, was great. And I'm happy and really just happy to be here and see how my skills are manifested, also how my opportunities are manifested. So after I did that, I started working with Overtime Heroics, just off my Black Baseball articles. And I did 14 articles for them on the Indians. I covered the Indians for a couple months. And it's funny, like, the second article I did was the Lindor trade. And that was just garbage. And I was about to cut them.
I was about to ask, how did you feel about that trade?
But I can't hear you guys. Like,
can you hear me?
My Wi-Fi is like, I can hear you, but my Wi-Fi is just trash.
Hey, welcome back.
Yeah, back from the Lazarus pit.
It's all good.
What we were saying.
Oh, anyways, right. Your career. So, your article got passed on Baseball Prospectus. You did the Francisco Lindor trade.
Yeah. Overtime Heroics. Yeah. Okay. So, I did the article on the Francisco Lindor trade. And I liked my stance on it. I put it out, and then I kind of pumped over a couple months period over some Heroics, and I left just because I had opportunities. But eventually, I got in contact with the editor of Baseball Prospectus, Craig Goldstein, and I did the playing percentiles preview article for the Cleveland baseball team for Baseball Prospectus for 2021 season. And that was really cool. That was nice to have on the bottom on a major thing like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I expanded my Black Baseball Player articles from just Black Players Director Diaspora in the major leagues, include ones in minor leagues also. And that has about six entries in so far. My Black MLB Player Series has 26, I think. I can't remember.
I was just looking at Class A, and it was 25, but I don't know which ones were since then.
25.
That was what Class A was. That's the one I have open in my my background right now.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. So it's dope. I'm going to continue to do that series on its own, but also the Go Over the Clubhouse Conversation series. I'll backtrack. The Black Baseball Players You Need to Know About series, they really kind of got me all my opportunities, just because there's so much there that shows who I am as a writer.
Oh yeah, sure.
Just with my technical aspect and delving into the backgrounds of the players. As my other assignments grew, where I was doing a bit of commentary and trade analysis and everything like that. So there also, that factor got included in there. So after that, I got the opportunity at Wooden Culture that happened. I got the opportunity to cover the Indians high affiliate for Indies Baseball Insider that happened at the same time also before the season was announced. Shout out Justin Lotta, by the way, for that. And also shout out Ken Allison at Overtime Heroics Baseball. But just to go over everything. So after that, what happened? After that, after I got with Unculture, I did a couple articles. We decided we wanted to do some bi-weekly stuff. And then one day when I was talking with my editor, we just said, how could we take the Black Place of Pleasure series articles and kind of spruce it up and do something more with it? Because there's a lot there that we can do with that. And we just kind of stoned upon an interview thing. And we were like, okay, we're going to take a home run swing with this. I put in a call to Jen Ramos, who has been there for me a lot. They've given me a lot of connections and a lot of their connections deep in baseball. They're the R&D for Baseball Perspectives. So shout out to them.
I talked to Jen.
Yeah, so
briefly earlier this year. They seem really cool, although I don't know them very well.
Yeah, so I got on Culture, and then they got me in contact with Justin Lewis. They got me in contact with Justin Lewis, a pitcher in the Arizona Diamondbacks organization from Atlanta, Georgia. And it started from there. And then, what happened? Second interview, DJ Gladney, I think. Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That sounds like, man, that's a whole lot of things to happen in such a short period of time. That's got
to
be
like, I'm still trying to recall it right now because it's like a whirlwind for me.
Oh my God, I can imagine it's kind of like kinda, you know, all of it just happens at once.
It's hard to recall at times just because when they're middle things, like I just had to cover two games over the weekend. So
yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, tell me about that a little bit. Are you doing like a daily beat on the minor leagues? I see you tweeting about it a lot. But tell me about that. What's your deal there?
So we got three guys on the Indians baseball insider roster that's covering Lake County. So we divide the homestand games up by third. So I only get to go to two games for homestand this year just because there's three of us on the beat. So I'm only going to be there like four times a month maybe because of my internship and me doing that and kind of getting into this. And by the way, I didn't go to college in communications for journalism or anything like that. I went to college for film production and screenwriting.
You know what, that makes sense since you were saying earlier that you were kind of into writing novels and screenplays. I'm curious, how did you kind of make the jump then from, you know, it sounds like you kind of had your head set on like, I'm gonna write screenplays and do film, and then to kind of go into baseball journalism as like where you are now. How did you kind of make that jump?
Honestly, I believe I'm a bit of a writer if I can understand the structure and the norms of a medium. I can do it. I write comic books. I write short stories. I write novels. I write screenplays. I write featureless screenplays, actually. And then the article thing was just – it was easy to me because I understood structure, because screenplays are about structure and rhythm and pace. Because you got the one page per minute thing and all that stuff implied in there too, and also the three-part act structure. And everything like that. And then you got the other ones also, whether they be the other traditional ones or the other abstract ones. But I mean, it's very similar. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're a good writer, you're going to be able to make the adjustment. And I feel like I'm a good writer and I made that adjustment. Mm-hmm. And my work speaks for itself so far. And that's why I'm kind of here today. But
Well, and I feel like, you know, writing after writing a whole screenplay or like a novel, that's a lot of writing to then like pivot to like, you know, an 800 word article. You know, it must feel almost.
I mean, I wouldn't put it that way. But it's different because you're not just writing fiction that's straight out the back of your mind. You gotta use your eyes and stack and the stats and everything.
There's analysis involved. That's a good point. No, that's a good point.
Yeah, but I like to think that it's a bit different.
When it comes to the writing, there's basic rules that carry over no matter what that you can use to your advantage. If you're going to send it here, you're going to send it there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like
that makes sense.
You're kind of, I don't know. I'd like to think. Go ahead.
It's just understanding the rules of the medium that you're writing in or whatever, or acting in. Or, like, an actor who isn't going to act the same on stage as he is in front of a camera. So.
It's going to be different. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, if it's like you're using the same parts of your brain, but in some different ways, I'd like to think. I've considered in like then as I grew older, I found myself being more interested in branching out into like other elements of not even like screenwriting or script writing or novels or anything like that, but other just like whether it's visual arts or music and stuff like that. I kind of feel like creative. I don't know. I'd have to develop this thought further, but I think the creative juices all kind of flow in the same direction. It's just about finding ways to fit them within the boundaries of whatever particular medium you're using at any.
I am. When it comes to creative stuff, I am a firm believer in you should make the thing that the thing that you have to make, like the thing that you feel like, whatever the genre, whatever type of art that may be, whatever you're creating, it should be something that you feel like you have to do, that it's like it's in you and you need to let it out. Those are the best things. You can manufacture an article or any kind of art. You know, if you're a musician, you can create a song if you have to. But the best stuff is the stuff that you just have to make because it's in you to make it, no matter what branch of your creative endeavor that may be. But so I'm curious. So Pat, I'm very curious. Your Twitter handle is @tangible_uno for anybody who would like to follow you on Twitter. And I'm very curious, where does that username come from?
I love Twitter handle backstories.
So my original Twitter account, Captain Video, got suspended because of something to your laptop. I was running on Kershaw and then again to a Hall of Fame.
Oh, let me tell you, I know something about pissing off Kershaw.
Wait, what'd you say? I didn't hear you.
Back in November, I wrote an article for Pitcher List about why Curt Schilling should not be in the Hall of Fame. And I think Mike Petriello picked it up and tweeted it out. And I still get emails now from people commenting on it, you know, with you can imagine the
That was like your first article on Pitcher List too.
That was like my first, it was like one of my first non strictly analytical articles. Yeah. I was here for all of last summer, but
That's right. Yeah, that was like, but, yeah, and yeah, it was just this. The response to it was what you can expect, which was a lot of people saying he's absolutely right, and then a small handful of people saying this guy should die. Like, it just was this hatred. Is it still really getting comments though?
Oh, I still get I don't know, since we, I guess we have the option to close comments now, but I still, for like a very regularly every week or two, would still get, you know, some, you know, sorry to interrupt. Yes, that happens. We talk a little too much shit to Curt Schilling and we get ourselves suspended, you know?
Right.
That happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is what it is. But tangible_Uno, this real one in a really uncreative way.
Word. Yeah. Simple is best sometimes.
Yeah.
That's that. Actually, and they actually gave me Captain Video back, actually, but now Tangible Uno has a larger following than Captain Video, so now Captain Video is a backup. So I mean, I'm winning right now. I'm winning right now.
Valid. Speaking of Twitter, I guess we usually kind of veer back and forth between like baseball related stuff and completely inane random stuff. Just speaking on Twitter, you tweet a lot about music too. You like tweeting screenshots of what you're listening to. Just curious, what have you been listening to a lot lately?
Actually, I listen to a lot of Alice in Chains lately. I listen to Alice in Chains like every day.
A lot of what, sir?
They're my favorite band, and Alice in Chains.
Oh,
Alice in Chains, very nice.
I haven't listened to them in a minute.
It's been same here. Yeah, it's been a while.
They're one of my favorite bands. I listen to them a lot on a daily.
I always got caught up, I feel like, in just how sad this story of
Layne Staley.
Layne Staley.
Layne Staley. Yeah. They're like what's that album? Dirt
is incredible. Brilliant. I have the Greatest Hits album, and it comes on my shuffle a lot. What do you like about that?
That's one of the albums
in the 90s, honestly.
As it should be. That's a band I really need to get back
into. I honestly think Facelift and Dirt are two of the best, or some of the best albums in the 90s, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gosh, we got to get you on here with
yeah, I'm biased.
Had a good conversation with that. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Oh my god.
But yeah, as far as bands go, my favorite bands are probably Alice in Chains, Tool, Steely Dan.
Love the Steely Dan shout-out.
Pantera.
Pantera's great. Man, some great choices.
Metallica, Megadeth.
So you're kind of like into some of the heavier stuff a bit. You're kind of a...
Yeah, I mean, I'm into everything. I play the good electric guitar and electric bass. So,
that's awesome.
I'm very eclectic.
What kind of guitar do you have?
So, I have a jazz background, so...
Okay.
Jazz and soul-ish.
That's awesome. What kind of electric guitar do you have?
Actually don't have any right now, but when I did, I had a triple black Strat.
Ooh.
And then as far as basses go, I had a just generic black bass guitar that sounded really good, had a really good tone, so I kept it sturdy. Just I don't know, some uncle got it for me or something.
That's awesome. Oh man, triple black Strat. Oh, that sounds so sweet.
Yeah.
I do love a good Strat. A long time ago when I first started playing guitar, I decided to make my bed in the Les Paul area of guitar. And that was my first real guitar. And then I ended up getting a Gretsch as like a hollow body, and I've never really gotten another electric since. I've always wanted to go get a Strat sometime, because man, just some songs, Strats just sound so good. They're so nice.
I'm about to pick up a fretless bass sooner or later. I think I want to get into that.
Yeah.
Try that. Nice.
Fretless is tough, but it sounds so good.
I don't have it in my room with me, but I took the first bass I ever had was I had just like a crappy Squire. I don't remember where it's from, but once I eventually upgraded as like a birthday present, I have a nice jazz bass. And so I just had this other one sitting around for a while, and what I ended up doing was I de-stringed it and pulled out all of the frets and, like, you know, filled it with putty and sanded it up and made a very, very janky homemade fretless bass that sounded like not quite like a fretless bass, because I was really bad and rough with it, you know, but it was a unique. Anyway, fretless basses are super
cool. Yeah, they're great. They're great.
You also tweet a lot about anime and manga, which I'm kind of curious about, because I've watched like some of the classic stuff as far as anime goes, like, you know, the Full Metal Alchemist, like, grew up on Naruto, DBZ. But like, I'm not, and a lot of my friends are really, really into it. I'm not particularly, but I see you tweeting about it a lot. So I'm just curious what some of your favorites are and what it is about the medium that you enjoy, or what it is that speaks to you.
My favorite manga are Heat, Sanctuary, Monster.
Oh, I think we lost you. I can't hear you. You are muted.
Uh-oh.
Look, can you?
Oh, there we go.
Okay, hey, welcome back. Did your AirPods die? I had a feeling that was probably it.
No, I closed the thing.
Oh, I got you.
I don't know what I did. But...
All good. So anyways, we left off. You were naming some of your favorite manga.
Okay,
this is an area I know literally nothing about. So, you know,
fair enough.
Go for it. Yeah, please tell me more.
I forgot about Bakuman Retro. That's the legal manga. So I should like the legal manga. Sign it. Mm-hmm. So for me, I just break down my preferences. I prefer seinen manga over shonen, mostly like the popular shonen we grew up on. I like seinen more now just because of the psychological depth and the more mature themes and the more blurred lines of the characters, and the gray areas are more emphasized, and you see it's just different also. Like Sanctuary and the other manga by the writer Bronson and the artist Ryoichi Ikegami. It's kind of nori and pulpish, it's kind of American influence. Mm-hmm. Like, think of John Woo and Johnny To movies, but in manga form, 10 years before or right at the same time. Like, literally, that's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that kind of, and then, So my manga taste, my taste in manga anime really intersects with my taste in movies and TV. So
interesting.
And fiction.
That makes a lot of sense. No, that actually makes a lot of sense. What is your taste in movies, TV in that case?
I like crime, noir. That's really compelling to me to use that genre to create compelling narratives about various things and to comment, do commentary on social commentary also.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite film noir? I'm always looking for new film noir film.
My favorite film noir film would have to be probably Memento.
Ah, yeah. Great choice. Memento is, what a great movie. One of my favorites ever.
I'll backtrack. My favorite film noir movie this counts. It would be Heat by Michael Mann.
Oh, that's another good one. You know what? That's one
that's my favorite movie of all time.
Oh, really? See, that's a movie I watched a long time ago, and I need to rewatch it because I did not appreciate it. I was like 16, and there's no way I would appreciate it differently now. I think I need to see that again because I came away from it being like, that was cool.
It was ahead of its time. Yeah. It was ahead of its time. It was 20 years ahead of its time.
That's awesome. Yeah, you've inspired me. I'm going to rewatch it soon. Yeah.
I'm gonna give you something else that's gonna make you really want to watch it.
Yeah,
everybody on that film: Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, what's his name? What's his face?
Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer. Everybody, the police are officers and robbers. They train with actual firearms, like
really?
3-4 months before the film. They started even doing stuff. Camera, like they were doing the maneuvers for the different choreography for the different scenes with compounds they created and stuff like that. Also, like he had the robbers singing like robbers, and he had the cops singing like cops. And that's just to give you how in depth Michael Mann is, because he's also my favorite film director, and I see myself as a Michael Mann disciple. What I want to do as a film director with the precision and what he does and the genres he's in. You ever seen Thief with James Caan?
Thief. Yes, Thief is really good. Yeah.
Do you know the story that the consultant he had on that film was a person that was a bank robber on the FBI's most wanted list?
Really? I did not know that.
Yes. And there was a book, but the book, it was like very limited print. It was like $200 book. And I might ask one of my family members to buy it for my birthday. But it's very interesting. Michael Mann is very hands on. Like he was like for when he did the Miami Vice reboot with Jamie Foxx and what's his face?
I know who you're talking about. I forget his name.
Oh man. I'm forgetting everybody's name today. This is embarrassing as a film person.
We can find it out. Oh, please. There's so much to remember. We'll find out in 5 seconds, 4, 3. Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He stays like a drug rate. He stays a drug rate for them to get like, he made them think they were getting involved in the drug rate walk-in. Like they were going to, like, because they were trained with police officers to ride around police cars and stuff. He made them think that they were going to actually be a part of a drug rate. So.
Whoa!
When they're training for police roles, he's one of those.
Yeah, he's like he did one of my favorite murder mysteries, or I guess it's more of a serial killer film. The sort of precursor to Silence of the Lambs, Manhunter. Yeah, Manhunter.
Yeah,
brilliant movie.
I've seen it. I think.
Oh, yeah. I love it. It's an earlier one. Mm-hmm. It's really really good.
Yeah, it is.
It's I mean, like,
but you can still see his genius in, like,
oh yeah,
you gotta watch. Yeah, all the films are must watch films just so you can understand who he is as a director and how he also writes his films, because he writes all his movies too, and that's really great. And how he kind of considers each thing when he writes everything.
Yeah, no, he's done some. Yeah, Thief, Manhunter, Heat, Last of the Mohicans,
Insider,
Insider's really good. Yeah,
that's a great
Public Enemy.
Public Enemies,
Enemies. I didn't know that. Oh yeah, I'm looking at his film.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh
yeah. He.
Oh okay.
Yeah, he's done some great movies. He's that's a great choice.
He has the greatest shootout of all time too. I'll put that on everything.
Which one?
Heat has the greatest shootout of all time.
Yeah. That's I need to rewatch. I need to figure out where that's streaming because I really need to rewatch that. But anyways, let's move forward. We want to start talking a little bit about baseball. You know why would we talk about baseball? That's silly. But the kind of the main question of this podcast that we ask everybody is we want to know, why do you love baseball? What is it? But there are a lot of sports out there. You know, you could be a big football fan or basketball or, you know, whatever. But what is it about baseball specifically that really draws you in, that you love about that sport?
Baseball is a chaotic sport where you have guys that are only succeeding 20 to 30% of the time at best, maybe 40 or 50 if you're
a
generational player. And that you guys are superhuman, basically. I mean, these guys are at 1%. We're seeing the greatest individual baseball league in the world just based on talent acquisition and funding and visibility and things like that. And while the means to get it is something I dislike and everything, that some of the other things about the sport I really dislike, and I'm gonna to me, baseball is kind of just something that seemed to always attract me, even when I kind of turn my head to other things. It has a great history, and it's just something that is very appealing to me in terms of there's so many new things that always happen, and just the success is so exciting, whether it's pitching or hitting and things like that, and just the game and within the game and be able to understand the things and very nuances to the game. Now it's just I'm attached to the game now. Like I'm stuck.
Yeah, it does. That's a
really cool answer that I never really thought about, with saying that, like, you're looking at some incredible athletes who are playing a sport in which at best they succeed 30% of the time. Like, that's kind of that's a really interesting framing of baseball I never really thought about, because you're right. I mean, like, the best hitter in baseball is failing 65-70% of the time, just about, which is wild, because you're not going to get that in a lot of other sports where, like, you're failing so often and you're, like, the best.
Right. And the thing is, that's cool. Not just I like that. In sports like football and basketball and hockey, things like that, your best player can take all the shots.
Right.
And your best player can guard the best player on another team. Your best player can affect so many different facets of the game if he's that good. Just like if he's equivalent to who these guys are in baseball, when in baseball, you only can do so much in the player appearances you get. You only can do so much on the balls that are hit your way. And you only can do so much on the base pass also.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that just makes it even more compelling. It's not even just for the stars, for baseball players in general. For the average players, the above average players, the above average players, etc. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. It just makes that much
more compelling and dramatic to me.
Yeah, I have always loved that, like, less skilled players can be heroes in baseball in a way that they can't really in other sports. Like, the prime example I think of, and it's just because it's recent memory, is Brett Phillips last year with the Rays hitting, you know, that walk off. Like, that in a basketball game, you're giving your final shot to your best player. In hockey, same thing. In baseball, you know, in hockey and basketball or whatever, Brett Phillips doesn't happen. Brett Phillips is on the bench because, you know, he we don't need him with 2 seconds left on the clock. But in baseball, it happens. And that's kind of, it's this, like, beautiful underdog story that is just so heartwarming. And again, and, you know, really the exception rather than the rule, because more often than not, the bad players are not going to do great, but sometimes they do. And it's just this beautiful thing. So yeah, that's cool. That's a great answer. I love that.
Yeah. That's a good one. So
yeah.
What are some of your earliest memories with baseball? I know you talked a bit about CC earlier.
So I went to my first game in 2001. But my earliest memory of baseball was going to some games early as a kid. when I really first got into baseball was when I was in second grade. I got in trouble and I got suspended from school, and I had to make up, I had to do a makeup assignment. And my mom and me wrote a book report on Satchel Paige. And after that, after I did a book report and presented it and everything like that, that's when it kind of started. And it's kind of interesting that it's now coming full circle with me doing articles on black players in the modern.
Yeah, yeah. You're kind of doing a bunch of book reports. Peers, so
yeah, basically, yeah. So shout out to moms, I guess.
Yeah, that's cool.
Thank you.
That's dope.
That's funny. I had to do a book report on a baseball player when I was a kid too. I did a book report on Larry Walker for some reason. I have no idea why. I don't remember why I did it, but yeah. But anyways, no, continue. Yeah, your early memories of baseball.
So after that, when CC got traded, I was sad. And, when they kind of started rebuilding and they got Michael Brown, whatever.
Yeah.
And then in that trade, my baseball attention to baseball kind of waned. I was more focused on movies and books and comics and stuff in that phase. And then when Jose Ramirez versus Lindor popped up in 2015 and 2016 and everything, they did what they did in that time span, that brought me back to baseball. And also when I was in a huge change of life, I graduated from high school in 2016, and I was going to study abroad in China right after I got done with high school. So just keep up at home, I'm keeping up with baseball in China. So I'm seeing Francisco Lindor grow into the players that they're going to grow into. And that kind of brought me back into the game. As I was also getting ready to go to college later that year. So
So it's on the record now. This is the second time, I think, out of 15 episodes, I'm not the youngest person on this pod. So I feel
extraordinarily old.
No, I've only got a couple of years on you. I was born in 95. But have you been to how many ballparks have you been to, and do you have any favorites? Major league, minor league, whatever. I mean, you don't have to like actually count them. Just talk about some of your favorites.
Well, I like Progressive Field a lot, actually. But no. I've been to Progressive Field, I've been in the Mahoning Valley's ballpark, Lake County, I've been to Akron and Columbus, I've been to Pittsburgh, I've been to
Pittsburgh's ballpark, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is, and plus it's right by Youngstown. Pittsburgh is 3 hours away from Youngstown, so we just went one day. I went to White Sox also. That's it.
So do you have a favorite? Is Progressive your favorite of all those fields, or do you have a?
Yeah, it's my favorite. This is my favorite team.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite like spot there? Food, drink, whatever. So like something you always get when you're at Cleveland game.
Not really. I really don't have anything like that. I kind of switch it up a lot.
Well, that's fair. That's very fair. So moving on. Breaking news. Something has happened to Rob Manfred. We don't know what it is.
What? What are you talking about?
Something has happened to Rob Manfred, but he has requested that as of tomorrow, Pat Ellington is named the commissioner of baseball.
Oh, you had me for a second. Yeah, I was just sitting like, what the hell? I'm like getting on Twitter, like, wait, something happened to Rob Manfred?
Yeah, me too. I'm like, wait, what happened?
So if you were to be named commissioner of baseball tomorrow, what is the first thing you do?
First thing I'll do is raise the minimum salary of MLB players. Raise the MLB salary of minor league players, make minor league players unionize, and stuff like that, mostly just related to the player condition.
Yeah.
Good labor.
And also the recruitments. And also make sure I hash out a J2 signing or posting system for Cuban players also, so that trapping system stops.
Right.
And so they can also be safer. And they can also go back home because they can't go back home. But it's also due to the blockade and everything like that with that illegal blockade.
Right.
That's a whole other thing in itself. But anyways, so you get it just so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are great, especially
a great set of answers.
Especially after all the talk of you know, that's been happening. I guess it was like what, last week that photo started going around Twitter of the meal some minor league players.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Getting like,
and also make home. I feel like MLB teams should be providing at least food and shelter for these people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The billionaires that own those teams, they can't do that. Yeah. Like
you don't want your product to be in the best condition that they can by having a great place to eat and sleep and all you want to cut corners. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, you know, the lack of it. Just please just sacrifice the short term profits from the minor league and just invest. I understand. Just throw some money at it, please. It's going to be better for all parties involved if you throw some money at it. Let the cop and the people improve everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember reading a story when Vladdy Jr. was still in the minors about how he had like his grandma on the road or something like that with him, like making him meals, and it was presented as this kind of like, you know, cute human interest story. And it's sort of like, wait, you're telling me that you've got, you know, the best 19-year-old baseball player on the planet and you're making him make his freaking grandma come on trips with them so he doesn't have to eat your stupid cheese sandwiches or whatever you give them on your $10 stipend. It's just like, it is really mind blowing how counterproductive it is in the long term. But then again, I guess these owners are not people who are used to taking short term losses. I don't know.
That's a very good, funny, because this is one of the scandals. There's so many scandals right now with minor league players, and you know, William Davis.
We had him on about a month ago.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You pointed out, you know, all the different things that are going on among foreign substance, and you know, that thing will be has on his hands.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. Well, I wanna move forward to the sort of the final section of the podcast where we kind of talk about the more, I don't know, random stuff. It's not even necessarily baseball focused, but first thing we are going to ask you, it is what we call the order of operations trifecta, in which we are going to ask you three things and we want to know the order in which you do those three things. First thing we're going to ask, when you get dressed, do you put on your socks or your pants first?
Socks.
Interesting. That is in the minority. Most people do pants first. Why socks first?
That's weird. I feel like putting socks first just makes more sense, just from with how clothes work.
Interesting.
You know, funnily enough, I can't really even argue with that. Like,
no, I think this is good pants defense.
Just, if it feels if it feels right, it feels right.
You know? I mean, pants go over socks. I mean, my socks on first.
I can get it. I can get it. I can understand it. No, I like it. Like Zach said, there have been good defenses for both. We've had people say socks first. We've had people say pants first, and I think both make sense depending on the person.
I think the majority say pants first as kind of like a natural thing. The people who go socks first usually have like kind of tight clothing as the rationale, where it's like if you're wearing like leggings or really tight jeans or something, then it makes more sense to put on the socks first. But like, no, I don't think I could give a justification for like me going pants first other than just being like, that's what it feels like.
That's,
you know,
just what I do. So yeah.
That's just what I do. So I respect that. So number two on the order of operations trifecta is milk and cereal when you're eating the two. If you do eat the two, which comes first?
I don't eat cereal.
Easy answer.
Oh, you're a no cereal guy. That's cool. That's cool.
Bet. Okay. You're the first one person we've had who doesn't eat cereal, but that's, I'm actually kind of surprised it took that long because cereal is like,
It's not like literally everyone eats cereal. I'm surprised. All right. So the last one, when you brush your teeth, water or toothpaste first?
Toothpaste in the water.
That makes sense. Yeah. Toothpaste, then water to seal the toothpaste. on the toothbrush. Well, that is the correct
water
way to do
on
it.
On the toothbrush. Should not do the toothpaste. Should not do the water.
Okay, so yes.
That is the that perfect is the way to do
that
it.
That is the correct. We've been waiting for that for several
thank
weeks.
Thank you.
Now. That's how thank it needs you to be done. Yes.
That is you do exactly. Not get you win. You win the podcast. You've won. That was the secret answer. You've won the podcast.
Shag and Flies is just over
so,
now.
That's yeah. So, you are a film guy. So I think this question hopefully will be right up your alley. Do you have a favorite and or least favorite baseball film?
Ooh, my favorite baseball film is 42. My least favorite baseball film is Legend of my least favorite baseball film is The Legend of Bagger Vance.
The Legend of Bagger Vance. I never thought of that as a baseball movie,
I don't know that movie at all.
Was it a baseball movie? I think that was.
It may be. I've never seen
that was,
it.
That
I've
was golf.
Well, is this one of those
I think that was golf.
Is it a baseball movie? So Wikipedia says I'm totally unfamiliar with this film that you're speaking of.
Oh, it's a
of.
Golfer.
Oh, yeah, that
it's
was
a golf.
Golf.
It's
that
a,
was golf. I'm sorry. That was golf. I'm tripping. It was a golf movie.
That's all good. I was thinking something else. Really?
I was gonna say, it says a sports film. I don't know baseball.
There's a baseball film that's like. I can't remember what it was. I'm tripping. I'm getting confused right now. But least favorite baseball film.
You don't have to have a
I'm
list.
Not sure.
I was going to say, also, like, if it's not that good, you probably don't remember.
That's it. Yeah, that's fine. But 42, so I'm curious. So yeah. 42 is your favorite baseball film. What is it about 42 that you really like?
To see a Jackie Robinson biopic, since Chadwick Boseman, RIP to him. And that was really good. And he's kind of done a lot of legends over the years, and he's a really good actor. And also,
yeah, he's great.
And also, Spike Lee had wanted to do a Jackie Robinson biopic, and I think with Denzel as Jackie Robinson, they didn't get put through. It fell through.
Oh, man.
So to see that,
that would have been
really
something.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh my God, that would have been really good. No, 42 solid. I enjoyed it. It's have you ever seen the Jackie Robinson story, like the movie from the 40s or whatever, or 50s. No, it was whenever Jackie Robinson came into the MLB, he did a movie about himself that he was in, or he didn't do the movie. There was a movie made about Jackie Robinson, and Jackie Robinson starred in it. And it's like, it's the most awkward, it's well intentioned, but it's the most awkward movie because Jackie Robinson is not an actor, like at all. Like, great baseball player, not a good actor. And he is. Obviously very much in it, but they drew from what I remember 42, they drew a little bit from that movie and put it in 42. But I agree, Chadwick Boseman.
So I've never seen Jackie Robinson.
You should watch it. It's like I said, it's not exactly a good movie. It's worth seeing because it's kind of cool to see Jackie Robinson in a film. It's kind of neat. It's like on. It's on all the streaming stuff. You know, Amazon Prime, Stars, all that stuff. But yeah, Jackie Robinson plays himself. I'm trying to remember if there's like any other famous people in it.
Okay,
I don't think there are.
So they had Ruby Dee played his wife, which had to be a little. I feel like maybe a little awkward for the real life Rachel Robinson. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know Ruby Dee that well.
She was in. I know her from Raisin in the Sun.
Oh, Raisin in the Sun. Hmm. That's right. That's right. She was in. That's right.
She's,
I totally.
She's one of the greatest actresses ever. She had a really long career.
I totally forgot about. Yeah, she played Jackie Robinson's wife.
Just sort of like he gets to play himself. And he gets the movie star to play his wife. You know, like,
yeah.
I don't know. Seems so. Moving on. Next, completely random question.
Yes.
So, I was going to ask if you have a non-favorite non-baseball athlete. I'm going to guess that might be LeBron, being a Cleveland guy. I don't know. Yeah. Yes, see, absolutely. I feel like we probably ended up growing up on the opposite side of quite a few different playoff series.
Where are you from?
I'm in Chicago. I've got a Derrick Rose fat head on my wall behind me, and I. It's funny. I was talking to someone about LeBron earlier because it's
wait,
like,
wait,
I,
turn it back, please. Turn it back,
yeah,
please.
Yeah.
Turn it back. That's disgusting.
It's hey, I moved in here. I moved in here when I was 12, man. It was the wave at the time.
No. I hate the Chicago Bulls. I hate Joakim Noah so much.
That's what you know.
Joakim Noah. Oh,
Ben, have you ever seen the famous the Joakim Noah Cleveland video?
I don't think I have.
So this is like part and parcel of like the modern culture of like sitting on Cleveland.
You never seen that?
I'll put it in the chat.
Joakim Noah is the personification of that.
Joakim Noah, the Bulls were playing the Cavs in the first round of, I want to say, like the 2009 playoffs or something like that. And I remember this was when I was I think Derrick Rose's like second year. It was the year before he won the MVP and turned into like a real superstar. So the Bulls were like the 7 or 8 seed going against
rookie year, I think.
Yeah. Oh no, it would have been his second year because his rookie year was against Boston. It had a crazy series.
Oh yeah, it was his second year. Because he won every year, third year.
Yeah, and this would have been like 2009. But anyway, so the Bulls are playing Cleveland in the first round, and this is like the one seed, the last Mike Brown Cavs team, I think I think this might be the last one before he goes to Miami. But the Bulls are getting crushed in the first round, and Joakim Noah is in his post game presser, just like. And someone asked him, like, you know, what are you doing? It's like, it's Cleveland. There's nothing to do. Do you like it here?
Do you regret anything that you said about Cleveland?
Not at all. You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say, I'm going to Cleveland on vacation. I mean, what's so good about Cleveland?
Do you have fun? Nobody goes to Cleveland, says. And have fun.
To go on vacation.
Dude. That's what I was saying. Like, it seems like an okay place. I don't know what Joakim was on that particular day, but that's the first thing. If you type in Joakim Noah into YouTube, Joakim Noah Cleveland is the first thing that pops up.
That is so funny. I remember when that just for some reason reminded me of when the Orioles and the Royals were up against each other in the ALCS.
Oh right, that was the thing. After
that, I know, right? After game three, the Orioles got swept, and after game three, the Royals were basically acting like the series was over and we've won, and they all showed up to the press conferences in T-shirts. That said, those O's ain't royal. And we're just like, oh my God. It was the hubris was just so gross. And the thing that really hurt me
personally.
First of
all, that pun, whoever came up with that pun needs to go to jail.
Well, yeah. But the thing that hurt me personally is one of those people who showed up in that t-shirt was Jeremy Guthrie. And Jeremy Guthrie was like, you know, the Orioles have never been that good, but Jeremy Guthrie was like our ace basically for like 5 or 6 years in the 2000s. Like he was a big part of the Baltimore Orioles. By ace, I mean, he was our number one starter. He was not that good, but he was our number one starter. And he was a big, big part of the Orioles for like 5 or 6 years. And then for him to do that, I still have a sour taste in my mouth about the Royals. But anyways, I will definitely have to watch that video. That's hilarious. I never heard about all that. That's crazy. All right, Pat, I have a question for you, and I'm excited because I'm hopeful that we're going to get a good answer. We'll see. And it's okay. No pressure if we don't. But have you ever seen a ghost or had some kind of experience that kind of made you go like, you know, something that you couldn't explain? Or have you ever had some sort of like out of body experience? Something weird?
Yes.
Oh my God. Yes. Tell me everything. Tell me every detail. There is no detail that is too small. Go.
I think there was just something that was just messing with the door in the room when I was in college.
Yeah.
Yeah. My first room. Shut. My sophomore year dorm. At Morehouse.
Oh, word. You were down there. So, was it just like open and shut? Like...
Yeah. Yeah. No, word. It would just, it would open and shut every now and then.
That's so weird. Just by itself? Like, it would just open and shut?
Yeah.
I feel like that's the most honest kind of ghost story, though, because whenever we ask this question, we want to see, like, oh, yes, like, I saw the specter of, you know, Babe Ruth come to me in my sleep.
Right.
But no, it's like the most, I feel like most ghost stuff is like totally mundane. Like, I saw a ghost the other day, and I was walking down the street, and I was walking past this park, and there's like a kid play area in the park with like a sprinkler or whatever, kind of like concrete just for toddlers to run around in the water or do whatever. And there was one of those little, you know, those little toy cars that are like, you know, you run inside basically to make it move.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm walking down the street and one of those cars is just like spinning in a circle by itself. And there's no wind. There's no nothing. I'm kind of like, it's just spinning in a circle. Wild. And so I was like, oh, okay, word. Like, it's a ghost. I just minded my own business and kept on going. And I feel like that's, you know, that those are the honest ghost stories of the world. So
that's wild. So was the door opening and shutting, like, was that like freaking you out, or was it just something you're like, oh, there's the ghost again?
Well, I first thought it was a wind current, but it would happen when the window was closed. So.
So you just learn to deal with it.
Right? You just live with it.
I mean, that's all it really did for real. I mean, there was no really other issues. Like, I know, like, it would move stuff out of people's rooms and stuff, but I mean, it was no big deal for me.
That's why I actually kind of love that. I feel like DJ had sort of a similar story. We had DJ Short on, and he told a story about, like, there was a ghost that lived in, what, he said it was a relative to us. His grandmother's place. And basically, it was the sound of somebody walking up the stairs and then setting stuff down upstairs. And they just were kind of like, oh, yeah, that just happened. Like, they're just like, yeah, cool. We just learned to live with it. I love that. That's kind of hilarious to me. Yeah, it's, yeah, really. Oh, man, his story got really weird because he told us twice, he and his brother, I think it was, was a brother, someone, I think it was
his brother.
They stayed up late at night. They're like, we're going to see this ghost. And they straight up, like, literally saw a thing, like a ghost, walk up the stairs, and they just twice they stayed up late just to see it.
Like,
and they were just kind of like, oh, cool, and like that was like, would have terrified me.
That's crazy.
They were just like, oh, neat, there's that ghost. Just crazy.
So keeping the theme of the supernatural, if you had a superpower, what would it be?
Let me think about it. What would it be? I'm not sure. Probably invulnerability, like Superman or something like that, where I can't really be harmed.
It's like invincibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Utilitarian.
I'm utilitarian. Like that.
That's a good one. That's good. It makes sense.
Yeah.
That would be the most useful, that's for sure.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about that a little. Like,
what superpower?
I'm just thinking, like, what would that, like, where would, I guess, like, the function come in? You know, like, I like, it would be useful, but I'm saying, like, would it be, would you just, like, not die? I don't know. I'm not like asking this question to you specifically. I'm just trying to picture what would happen if I was just like, you know, if that were to happen, like, what would I be doing? You know,
I was thinking of it more as like the Man of Steel kind of thing, like your body is invincible, not necessarily that like you literally cannot die, but like your body is made of steel basically, which I guess is pretty close to the same thing. I don't know how does the anatomy of Superman work, Zach? Do you not know?
That's very true, but yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of cut off guard right now. I really have my mind on comic books.
I got you. No. It's all good. It's all good. That's fine. Yeah. So let's move on. If next question for you, and this will be the second last question. We got two more questions, and then the last thing, the full count, which will be fun. But second last question: if you could see a live performance from any musician ever, who would it be?
Janet Jackson.
Oh, interesting choice. Why Janet Jackson?
Wait. I changed my mind. Sade.
Sade. Okay. Even cooler. I like that. All right. So why Sade?
I really like the band as a whole, whether it be singer, lead singer Sade, who's in that band's name after her backing group. They're really excellent in their own right, and the songwriting is great as well. And she also sounded a great live, so I would like to see that.
Yeah, I bet. I bet that would be a good show, actually. I never that's a great choice. I love it.
So they haven't done anything live in a while.
Oh god, it's probably been probably been a while. I have no idea. I haven't really kept up with Sade for a long time. Okay. Last question.
That is a good one.
Last question before we move on to the final section. So you've been writing a whole lot. You've been writing a long time. What is
I've been writing a long time, but I've really been. Oh, you're talking about writing in general. I'm sorry.
You've been writing. Writing has been a big part of your life for a long time. What is one of the most important lessons? What is one of the most important lessons that you've learned about writing?
You got to keep going even on days when you feel bad. That just kind of makes you professional, you know? I may feel bad as a writer, but I still have to be able to put out good pieces. I'm doing so. So, I mean, it's just kind of going through that, you know, when the process kind of gets mundane or you're burnt out or you're tired or a certain art you're working on isn't seeing any growth and it's kind of carrying with you in your other assignments and stuff. But, for me, I'm kind of new to this still, and I have no background in communication, so I'm still kind of learning and getting my feet wet and just taking one article at a time.
Yeah. No, that's great though. I can't tell you how many times I've been in that situation. Yeah.
And if there's a common theme I'm noticing to all of, we've had now like what 14 different guests on this, and everyone seems to just kind of fall into this like half accidentally, you know, no one's like,
yeah.
Everyone's always kind of just making it up as they go along, it seems. And then it's, then it turns out you're good at it and people read your stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting. I love that lesson because there have been so many days I do, as my day job is as a healthcare journalist, and man, there have been so many days where like, I've got to write an article and I just don't feel like it. I really do not feel like it. And you just got to push through. Sometimes you just got to push through that. And sometimes it's going to kind of be a bummer, but you'll get through it. So on to the full count. The full count is we're going to ask for a recommendation in each of five categories. The one thing I always preface this with is whatever, it does not have to be something obscure or anything like that. It can be something obvious. It can be obscure, whatever you want. I've always said the first thing that pops in your head is the answer that I want to hear. So with that in mind, very first category is books. What is a book that you would recommend?
House of Leaves. Can include like comic books and stuff too, but for the record.
I said House of Leaves.
Oh no.
House of Leaves. Oh man. The
Sec. Did you say House of Leaves?
House of Leaves, yeah.
Yes.
The Mark Danielewski book. Is that what it is?
Yes. I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, it is, dude. It's a wild book. It's kind of a, would you call it a horror book?
Kinda.
Yeah, it's a horror book. It's about, it's been over a decade since I've read it. I have it. It is a really weird book.
No, Pat, tell me about it.
Okay. Oh yeah, tell him about it. Yeah, tell me.
So this guy who's a tattoo artist buys a house, and the house has a labyrinth under it. And he's also kind of losing his mind, and we're in the midst of relationship issues and mental issues and stuff like that also. Mm-hmm. And so the people around him, and a whole bunch of people get lost down there and try to kill each other and collaborate and go crazy and try to find his way out. And what makes the book different is he'll use the pages, like he'll put the words in certain ways in order to kind of illustrate what's going on and stuff like that. And it's very, very, very weird and different, but it makes so much sense and it adds so much more depth and texture to the book.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of a visual thing too, because of how the words are placed or the way it looks. It's definitely not a book you should ever get on a Kindle. Definitely a book you have to have the physical book. He also Mark Danielewski also did this book that I own but still haven't gotten around to reading called Only Revolutions, which is a really fascinating concept. Each page, half of it is right side up, half of it is upside down, and you can start the book at any point, and the book is a circular story from beginning to end. You get to the end of the book, you turn the book upside down, and then continue reading. And it's the dude does all these kind of weird, strange things, and it's really fascinating. But yeah, House of Leaves is a good call. That was everybody when I was in high school in like 2007, 2008. Everybody was reading that. Everyone was reading it. It was all over the place. But yeah, no, that's a great choice. I love it.
I love when they do people do that with their writing and bring visual and just other elements into it. I'm reading a book right now called Wayward Lives, Beautiful Experiments by Sadia Hartman, and she does some similar stuff too with like kind of spreading photographs in the backgrounds of pages and having text run over it and stuff like that. I don't know, it just brings out like a whole other creative dimension into writing, like kind of
you would probably dig House of Leaves if you like horror. It is horror, but it's
interesting.
Freaky,
so that's a good one. I'm gonna check that out, having not seen it. So recommendation number 2 of 5 is food of any kind, restaurant, ingredient, meal, whatever. What would you recommend?
Steak and lobster.
Steak and lobster. Any particular place you like to get a steak and lobster from?
I don't know. Ruth Chris has a really good one.
I'm a huge surf and turf guy. That's like my go-to whenever I'm at a really fancy lake where it's going to be a crazy bill anyway, so I might as well go off or something like that.
If you're going to get wet, you might as well go swimming.
I mean, see, I do surf and turf at the steakhouse at the Hibachi place. I mean,
at the Hibachi. Yeah, no, that's a good one. That's a good one.
No, that's a great choice. I love that. All right, next category. We talked a little bit about this, but what movies and or TV? What is a movie and or TV show that you would recommend?
Movie would have to be Heat by Michael Mann. TV show would be The Wire.
The Wire. Yes, that's my favorite TV show of all time. Brilliant show.
That's right.
The Wire is the greatest TV show in history of the entire medium, in my opinion.
Absolutely, 100%. Could not agree more. The Wire is so well written.
It's good enough that like you don't even think about how bad off the rails the fifth season is, and it doesn't even matter. Like it doesn't matter.
It is like, such a good show. Oh my god! And perfectly casted, just brilliant. I need to rewatch it. It was so good. Great choice. Two great choices. Love those.
Yeah. This Wire series 3 is the greatest season in the history of television, I would contend. But okay. Also, we talked about music quite a bit, but if you had to recommend anything music related, what would it be?
The Price of Tea in China by Boldy James.
Did you say I know this guy. Say Boldy James.
The Price of Tea in China by Boldy James and The Alchemist.
Yeah. Oh my god. Great. The Alchemist is The Alchemist is fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh man, he makes these great beats. He's done a lot of stuff. He's done a lot of stuff the past few years.
I remember the one I know him from is Rare Chandeliers, the project he did with Action Bronson back in like 2012.
Action Bronson.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Alchemist, didn't he also, he was in, what was it, Lord Steppington, that album Lord Steppington. Mm-hmm. That was a good album. And he did he did Alfredo with Freddie Gibbs. That was the other one.
Yes, that's what I was trying to think of.
That was a really good one.
He has a lot of projects, a lot of great producers, a lot of great rappers and stuff like that. And he also raps. So.
Oh yeah, Boldy James is very good. And Boldy James and the Alchemist, Price of Tea in China, really solid album. Last year, that's a great choice. I love that. Totally caught me by surprise. That's a good one. Everyone should definitely check that one out. All right. So final category, miscellaneous. This can be anything from your life that you would recommend. This can be an activity, a practice, a location, literally a gadget, literally anything from your life that you would recommend someone else do? I have it. Oh, you have it. Go.
Minor League Baseball.
Minor League Baseball. Yes. That's a great choice. Why Minor League Baseball?
It deserves more visit, things like that.
Absolutely.
It's better for all.
I couldn't agree more. Yes. It's so much fun.
I've actually... Oh, no.
Oh, we lost them. So close.
Oh, we're so close. We're so close.
Come back.
There we go. So close.
Welcome back. That's all good. No, you know what? We're just wrapping up now, but no, minor league baseball.
Yeah, we're almost there. We're almost there, man.
We're almost there.
Minor league baseball.
Great choice. Yeah, minor league baseball. Everyone should, wherever you are, there's probably a minor league team near you, and you should go see them play because it's going to be cheap. It's going to be inexpensive for you to go, and it's going to be fun. They're always so much fun.
I do. So before we wrap up, I guess we lied. I have one more question. And then we will for real.
Okay.
Which of these, this is food related. Which of these two concepts, things that people do with food, sounds weirder more appalling to you? A pickle on a hot dog or crab dip on French fries?
Can you repeat the question? You kind of break it up when you asked.
Sorry there. So
I got everything else.
People do these things to food, and I need you to tell me which one you think is weirder. Putting a pickle or a pickle spear specifically on a hot dog, or putting crab dip on French fries?
Probably crab dip on French fries, but I feel like the crab dip on French fries would taste better than a pickle on a hot dog.
There you go. Yes, crab dip on French fries is delicious.
Like I've seen a pickle on a hot dog before. I've seen a pickle spear on a hot dog before, actually.
So what Zach is alluding to is, I think it may be
a Midwest thing.
It's a Chicago thing. I've given Zach a bunch of crap for the Chicago style hot dog, which includes not only a full dill pickle spear, but also tomato wedges and celery salt.
Okay, like the wedges are perfect. It's like chopped up. You can't even tell it's a wedge.
Well, it's
unnecessary, man. Thank you.
I don't want a whole hot dog salad and only mustard, no ketchup. Yeah. There's all kinds of weird stuff.
So.
We do Camden Yards, Oriole Park at Camden Yards. They do crab.
It's definitely weird, but it sounds like it tastes better.
That's a valid answer, actually.
That's great. You know,
one of us is both sides.
I mean. But Chicago is a place where they make lasagna with crust. So,
hey, you know, I'm not even going to argue that because, like, I don't even disagree with
them. Oh my god! Well, anyways, we'll end this podcast on a positive note with you being right. The crab dip on French fries is delicious. But anyway, seriously though, Pat, we want to thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It was a lot of fun to get to talk to you. And you're just a joy, and it was really cool. So thank you so much for being here. It was a lot of fun.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, man, no problem at all.
Thank you for having me.
See you around.
I'm really honored to be here.
Yeah, man, you'll be on the list when we do the rounds again. If you're ever in Chicago, slide over.
Absolutely.